Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay. Chapter 21, Conversation Between Manu and Cardano. Pratigya. Evidence of a relationship of mutual beneficial interest is visible in Manu and Kardama's exchanges. The Pratigya is expressed in this excerpt from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 56. When a guest comes to a friend's house, it is understood that there is some special purpose. Kardama Muni could understand that such a great king as Swayambhuva, although traveling to inspect the condition of his kingdom, must have had some special purpose to come to his hermitage. Thus he prepared himself to fulfill the king's desire. Formerly it was customary that the sages used to go to the kings, and the kings used to visit the sages in their hermitages. Each was glad to fulfill the other's purpose. This reciprocal relationship is called bhakti karya. There is a nice verse describing the relationship of mutual beneficial interest between the brahmana and the kshatriya. Kshatram dvijatvam. Kshatram means the royal order, and dvijatvam means the brahminical order. The two are meant for mutual interest. The royal order would give protection to the Brahmins for the cultivation of spiritual advancement in society. And the Brahmins would give their valuable instruction to the royal order on how the state and citizens can gradually be elevated in spiritual perfection.
So this whole idea is that the two go together. You can't have one without the other, because the Brahmins, they know what the Shastra, what is to be done, what is the mood and everything like that. But it has to be applied, right? And that's what the Kshatriyas do, right? And you have to apply something, otherwise what's the point of having the knowledge? But without the knowledge, what's the meaning of the application? Right? So the two go together. Yes?
So can we say that the Brahmanas, they apply the knowledge they have to themselves and Kshatriya, to everybody else, to the society at large?
Yes. But I mean, it means yes. Because applying to yourself is one thing, everybody can do that. But then applying to the whole society, that takes that skill to be able to do. You know, it's just like when it comes to ashram, it's simply by desire, basically, you can make it work. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Because ashram is natural to everybody. It's the one thing that's common. But varna, each has their own varna. So it's not just by wishing that it happens. Does that make sense? Like there's a relationship, you want the relationship to work. Just by that desire, then basically you can make the endeavor, because it's based on the emotions and the exchange. So even if the skill or technique is not perfect, if the sincerity is there, it works. But when you're dealing with varna, it's actually the mechanics. You don't the sincerity is important, but if you don't have the skill, it does not work. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you may have all sincerity to drive the car, but you've never driven a car before. It's not going to work, right? But you don't necessarily know how to interact with a person, but you really want to, you'll do something that impresses the person. With time, the technique will come. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, therefore, everybody can apply the spiritual values that the Brahmins are teaching in their own life, but to see that it's done on a large scale so everybody can be included and the whole society is prosperous, that takes a Kshatriyas to do. Does that make sense? So in other words, administration is not something that just they have an interest and that's enough. I mean, of course, there should be an interest. Otherwise, why be involved? But that's not enough. So we're so used to that everything works on the ashram side, that developing the varna side means one has to understand it is material skill. It's based on your conditioning. It's not based on the soul. Ashram is basically, you have the conditioning, but the soul itself can make it work. But varna, you actually have to have the conditioning that works. You don't have the conditioning, it will never happen. Someone does not have, let's say, a business conditioning. It doesn't matter how much training, what school they go to, you know, how many sessions you sit there and go, yes, you can do it. I know you can do it. You'll never do it. It's just the way it is. You know what I'm saying? You know, a fish will never win the 100-meter dash. Doesn't matter what you do, how much you do, how much you put out petitions, and then the whole world, why? But he wants to do it. Why can't we? You know, it's not going to happen. Is that what I'm saying? It's not going to happen. So this is the other. This is the actual. The technicality of varnashram is not a big deal. Like that. The biggest deal is just accepting that that's what you got. But in this age, no one wants to accept this is what I have.
Well, unless it's like salt.
Yeah, that's there. How many of those are there? Right? Then you always hear stories of them wanting to just be like everybody else. At least temporarily for some fun, right? Hey, Louis used to do that. No? Yeah. So that is the biggest hurdle in varnashram. It's not the skill. It's not that, well, we have to have, you know, this. Or as the other day I'm hearing, oh, if we don't have land, how can we be, you know, vices, or how can we be kshatriyas? It has nothing to do with that. You know? As that story Prabhupada told about the mullock and the rat. You know? A 2-rupee rat was the basis for a economic empire that was the biggest in Calcutta. So it's not about, they didn't give me, so therefore, no, you make it. You know, so that's the thing. The Brahmin will make education, the Kshatriya will make administration, the Vaishya will make economics. It's not dependent on anything. But an artist, he has the skill, but unless there's some facilities, then he may not be able to do it. I doubt, yes.
It sounds so complex because we all run Shankara. So nothing is really predominant.
But that's the point, is that it's complex because the simplicity of it we just don't want to accept. Like, means, you know, who wants to, means the first premise is, if we're going to make it work, you have to be able to accept the premise that I have a nature, that's the way it is. Who's willing to accept I'm a Shudra? Right? That's it. Nobody. So therefore, it's not going to work. Right? But the whole point is the system is your bulk is Shudras, that's how it works. Does that make sense? It's just like you go to, what's it, where was that in? It was Marks and Spencer's. Right? That's that big one? Down on the end of Oxford, right? Down at the other end? Yeah, but it's really big, like 4 stories. It takes up the whole block and everything. Was it? Unless I'm thinking of another one. Not Lewis and Carroll. Yeah, Marx and, huh? No, no, it's not that. It's huh? No, Herod's is another thing, but we could use that also. It's just some may or may not appreciate. So, there in that, they have thousands of workers. Literally, thousands. I mean, on the floor at any time, you're talking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, you know, and all the different shifts and everything like that. So, but how many vaishyas are there that run the place? Yeah, there'll be one or a little group of, you know, 2-3. You understand? Same with Herod. Same with anything big like that. You know, or you take these bigger ones, Tesco, Kmart, you know, tens of thousands, and there'll be a handful of vaishyas. So that's the whole point, is varnashram can't run unless somebody's willing to be the Shudra. Right? And I've only heard one person sincerely talk about just, he's not out of humility, just he is a Shudra. And he was comfortable with it. And then I've heard one other person talk about, I'm a Shudra, but it was just humility. Like, you know, so that makes sense. Because otherwise the guy was on every committee there is on the planet and had something to say about everything. But you know what I'm saying? Because actually they're a Brahmin, but you know, they just didn't know how to place themselves. You know? But no one else wants to, oh, well, you know, as soon as you breach that, oh, we're not the body, you know, somehow or another. You know, oh, we're grihasthas, you don't understand, we're this, that. Oh, so that, you know, but you have a job, so you're shuddha. Hey, we're not this body. You know. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is this mutual. You have to be able to accept. We're Brahmins. This is where, this is our rights. These are our obligations. This is where our authority is. This is where it ends. Same with the Kshatriya. This is our authority. This is where it ends. So unless someone can understand rights and obligations, then you can never establish Varnashram. So that's the problem. You can't establish Varnashram because everyone wants rights. No one wants the obligations part. You know? It's like 100% the half a duck principle. Right? The part that lays the eggs, hey, now that's good. The part that quacks and eats, now that's a problem. You know? Right? Yeah. Yeah. It works. Yes.
The principal quality of the sutra is service.
Yes.
That's also the dominating quality of the Vaishnava.
Yes. So that's why it's not a problem for us. So it's only because of Western prestige that that's not an accepted position. Otherwise, every other place in the planet could adjust with it. All other cultures could adjust that. Yeah, okay. I'm not that great. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I'm just part of the scene, like that. But somehow or another, the first world is so worried about that they just can't accept. You know, it's a very prominent. You know, it's there. You just see that's basically, if you look at it, yeah. The acceptance or the amalgamation of other cultures into themselves is so much easier in other parts of the world. Like that. Yeah, well, you see the Americans, the English, the Australians, they've always had a problem with something outside of their purview. Always had. Well, other cultures, it's just natural, you know, like in Europe, you know, it's like, you know, you walk 5 minutes, you're in another country that talks another language, you know. You walk 10 minutes the other way, then it's another one, you know. So it's just, they're used to that this is there, and there's constantly, you know, I mean, the French take over, everyone talks French. The Poles take over, everyone talks Polish. Germans take over, everyone talks German. You know, the Romans take over, everyone talks Latin. You know, so it's pretty much accepted that there's going to be this. Especially these three places, you know, they just don't have other people there.
Up until the mid-80s, there was the white Australia policy.
Yes, yes. So like that. So what I'm saying is that they have the most difficulty with this. You know, so therefore then, because that's kind of the leading flavor of the quote-unquote international, therefore then there's a difficulty in prestige. Like that. But it's not about that. It's about what is your nature. Because if you follow your nature, you're happy. It's just that the problem is because of the same culture, then it's not known for taking care of those who are juniors. There's always exploitation. You know what I'm saying? It's not like you see in the Vedic, the king goes, conquers someplace, and they protect the people there. You know, but I mean, the whole European history is they conquer anywhere else, then they exploit, you know, to the maximum, you know. And then when there's a revolt, you quell the revolt. And only if you can't quell it, then you, okay, you know, we're giving you freedom. And, all, you know, everything's nice and wonderful and very broad-minded. You know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, this whole first world, that it really has a problem with this idea. But everywhere else, Asia, the Middle East, Africa, South America, you know, other than Australia, you know, the whole Polynesia, and the whole, they don't really have a problem with this concept. You know what I'm saying? Because there's been a better application of it. Does that make sense? It's there, yeah. If you want to be most specific, we were trying to avoid such specifics. But Does that make sense? So it's simply conditioning that we can't accept our conditioning. If we could accept our conditioning, then everybody does what they're supposed to do within it. Because, as we said, in ashram, everyone's Brahman. And of the two, the ashram is the most important. Right? You go back to Godhead, basically, from your position in ashram, because it's the spiritual. Right? The varna is social. Does that make sense? I mean, because you're a grihastha, social means, you know, you and your friends, but you choose. Right? You know, that or your community. But varna, then the social things that are there, that's part of the varna. You have to go to the different programs and this and behave in a way that everybody's pleased. Does that make sense? So it's actually the lower of the two. But somehow or another it's become the higher of the two in the modern context due to passion and ignorance. So, therefore, what we'll see here is this mutual element is that the kings respect the Brahmins because of their spiritual knowledge, which is the ultimate goal. But the Brahmins aren't the one getting it done. Like that. The Kshatriyas get it done. Right? If a Brahmin can function on that level, then he'll be an advisor to the king. But still, it's the king who gets it done. Does that make sense? Yes.
How
do they
get rid of prestige?
How does?
How
to get rid of prestige? Basically, you have to lower ego. Right? Because we saw before is that when the ego comes up, then that creates the concept of communities and everything else and that. Wasn't that what it was? Meek Moha, and that generated the communities and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, because each one generated something.
Yeah, it's Moha.
Moha.
Sectarian societies.
Yes, that's the one. Sectarian societies and all that. Does that make sense? Because of ego. Ego has to go down because of ignorance. So that's the whole point. In the Vedic culture, because the Brahminical knowledge was the prominent factor, therefore egoism goes down because the ignorance is less. Ignorance is less, egotism goes down. Therefore then, your attachment goes down because you have knowledge. Because of that, your hatred goes down. And because of that, your absorption of material pleasure goes down. So then the whole society is balanced. Right? So in a society where we don't work on, it's not based on knowledge. It's just based on someone's feelings and their idea about management and organization. Then you're increasing ego. So even though they're using the words of being liberal and broad and all that, it's actually becoming narrower and narrower. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like I'm just reading the... Another four or five countries have just been added to the UN Security Council. You know, so it just means it's just, you know, for all that we're all together, but at the same time as then it breaks up more and more. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like one devotee was telling me when he grew up in Italy. I'm not sure if he grew up in Rome or more in southern Italy. The kids in the neighborhood, it's their village. So all the houses belong to the kids. So the kids would move around in a pack. You know, because they would play in that, and wherever they happened to be, that's where they ate. No one went home to eat. You ate at whatever house you were at, or whichever one you happened to walk by. You know, they would just, it's time to eat, they would call them all in. You know, they're out playing, they would call them in to eat. It's not like, okay, you boys go home and everything. No, they just ate anywhere. So what does that mean? You know, it's less. There's something because they're a community. But it's not so much like now where, you know... Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that okay? Yeah, so if it's based on Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, everything has to be. One can say as though that's theory. But if you don't, then it's ignorance. Right? And if it's ignorance, it means the ego will come up, therefore attachment, and therefore hatred. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So it appears that it's really doing a nice thing. But is it? You know, they'll sit around in these chairs, sit in a circle, and then make nasty comments about each other. And then everyone feels good. Oh, I got that off my chest and all that. Nice. You know, you've expressed your hatred. But unless you deal with ignorance, you won't get rid of it. You've expressed it now, but then something else will come up. Does that make sense? In other words, for the moment, everyone feels good because I got to say what I wanted. And everybody got to say something. So everyone feels good. But now once they leave that meeting, now everyone will think about what everybody else said. And then it's like, why are they saying that? You know, like that. Is that? Yeah. Is that okay? So this is the very essential point that's here, is that you're going to see that. And then the Brahmins would give their valuable instruction how to, in all these situations that a Kshatriya has to deal with, they can make it Krishna conscious. That doesn't mean they're controlling it. It's not that they give the advice, you have to do it like this. No, they simply point out the connections, how this area becomes Krishna conscious. Then the Kshatriya will use their intelligence how to apply it. Does that make sense? When the Brahmin micromanage, that's not the thing either. Does that make sense? The administrators don't control education. The educators don't control administration. They give each other support. And then let each other do their jobs. Is that? Yeah. Chapter 21 summarizes questions and answers. Question 73 of Srimad Bhagavatam is asked by Vidura of Maitreya Muni. Please give me an account of the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu, such as his powerful sons Priyavrata and Uttanapada, and his daughter Devahuti. She wed Kardama Muni. How many children did they have? Swayambhuva Mata had two other daughters. One wed Ruchi, the other Daksha. What offspring did these two sons of Brahma father in these women? Probably one of those ones you can say it over and over and then you can't say it anymore. One red Ruchi, one red, you know. One red Ruchi. Maitreya Muni's answer to question 73. For the rest of this third canto, Maitreya Muni's reply is focused upon Lord Kapiladeva, the son of Devahuti by Kardama Muni. For the other aspects of this question about Devahuti's other children, her brothers Priyavrata and Uttanapada and so on, look ahead to narratives in fourth and fifth canto. Because right, then that'll go through there. Because basically we're dealing with this question of, okay, the creation has been there. We've heard the primary very nicely, right, in these second and early third cantos. Because that's basically what it's about. Then we got into Brahma's creation, right, and heard it from a few different angles. Then it'll continue when it goes into the Manus, the Prajapatis, and then the kings. So that will basically be the rest of the conversation. Though again, sometimes to answer a certain aspect of this, you do have to go back to the primary and secondary aspects as a foundation. Is that? The narrative of Kardama and Devahuti contrasted with that of Kasyapa and Diti. This chapter begins the second story within Canto 3 of a husband and wife combining to beget offspring. The first is from Chapter 14, here Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu appear as the sons of Kasyapa Muni and Diti. The contrast in the circumstances of conceptions and in the qualities of the resultant offspring are noteworthy. And so when Prabhupada says it's a great science, then, you know, the science is presented. And, Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 21st chapter, the Lord, satisfied with Kardama's austerities and prayers, describes his future marriage. Swayambhuva Manu arrives. Vidura inquires about the lineage from Swayambhuva Manu, mentioning his two sons, Uttanapada and Priyavrata, who ruled the world. He wants to know about Manu's daughter Devahuti, who had married Kardama Muni, and about his other two daughters who had married Ruchi and Daksha. In reply, Maitreya describes the penance of Kardama Muni and its results. The Lord appeared to Kardama. Kardama offered his obeisances to the Lord and then prayerfully requests the Lord to satisfy his desire for a wife. The Lord replies by informing Kardama that Swayam Bhuvamanu will soon come to offer his qualified daughter, Devahuti, to become his wife. The Lord tells Kardama that he will have 9 daughters through Devahuti. Through these daughters, the sages will be able to procreate. Kardama, the Lord foretells, will then leave home and attain perfection. The Lord then informed Kardama that he, the Lord himself, will appear as his son, Kapiladeva, to teach Shankya philosophy. Having instructed the sage Kardama, the Lord departs for Vaikuntha. Bindusarovar was Kardama Muni's hermitage. It was wonderfully beautiful and peaceful. In 2 days, as the Lord predicted, Swayam Bhuvamanu arrived there with his daughter, Devahuti. Kardama Muni speaks to Swayam Bhuvamanu and glorifies Manu's position as king, the protector and regulator of society. Shloka Anusharanam. Vidura inquires about the lineage from Swayam Bhuvamanu. Kardama Muni's devotional austerities evoke the Lord's appearance. Kardama Muni offers the Lord's prayers. The Lord responds to Kardama Muni. The Lord fulfills his words. Kardama greets King Swayam Bhuvamanu. Verses 1 to 5. Vidura inquires about the lineage from Swayam Bhuvamanu. Vidura said, "The line of Swayam Bhuvamanu was most esteemed, O worshipful sage. I beg you give me an account of this race, whose progeny multiplied through sexual intercourse." Right? Because up to this point, none of the expansion had been through sexual intercourse. It had all just been for Brahma's mind. So now he wants to know, what is it? So now we've heard that expansion. So what about the expansion that expands through the combination of husband and wife? Right?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. They talk about Kardama, who was a Brahmana, and Devahuti being a princess. Would it be of an equal nature that you always talk about?
It's, how you say, one is that at this point in time, you probably don't have a lot of options. seeing that, the Kumaras and Narad Muni are out of the picture, right? So then, right? You do have that principle is there, but we see is that personalities from that kind of combination can be very expert at the Puranas, which means all these technical points and histories and everything like that. Does that make sense? So it does work. But generally what it means is the wife is going to live by the nature of the husband. Right? She may be from a princess background, but she can't expect royal treatment from the husband. Right? She's going to get, a nice little cottage, a nice river nearby to take her bath and bring her water from, plenty of cow dung patties that, to make her own fire, and, lots of spinach and roots from the forest. Okay. So then it can work. So in these ages, because of the qualification, the girl would just adjust. Right? And so then it works. So that's the thing, is that she adjusts to his field, but he adjusts to her controlling that field. You understand? So it works both ways. Because the idea is, though, the girl has to adjust and then he'll control it. Or it'll be her field and she'll control it. Both of these are wrong. No, it's his field, but she'll control it. Does that make sense? Like that. But it's not that the girl doesn't inspire the man to do his best within his field. But she can't complain that, my father did this, and my father... She can't say that. Otherwise, stay at home with your father or marry someone from that community. You know what I'm saying? So these things can be done, but because of these, because we say that's so simple, but that's actually the hardest thing. The hardest thing is to adjust to what you have. Like we were discussing before in Varnashram, it's just, this is the nature I have. So adjust with it. Does that make sense? Some of the nicest devotees I've seen are ones who have no problem with their background. Even if it is very simple or not very socially developed, they'll talk about it so pleasantly, not by attachment, just that's what we used to do as kids, and the parents did this, and that happened, and it just is so comfortable just because they're comfortable. Is that what he says? So that's the whole thing, is that if someone's comfortable, then everybody's relaxed. Everyone just gets down and does what they're supposed to do. Right? Is that...
Question that the quality of people, because those are the first living beings, they have to procreate, and if they're coming from not lower, of course they're very highly elevated, but not like brahmanas of the top character or something. Could you say that?
Means them? No, these are brahmanas of the top character. You'd have to accept Kardama and these others, Brahma's top character. Daksha is a bit of a smarta, but you know, but still, as far as the rules and regulations, you're not going to get a better smarta than him. You know, he's like the smartest smarta. You know, so no, these are all, they're all like top quality like that. So basically, it's at this point, Swayambhuva is the only Kshatriya as such. Right? You know, so his sons and daughters then will have that background. But otherwise, up to this point, no one's a Kshatriya as of now. So that's why, because the difference between a Brahmin and Kshatriya is very slight. Like that. So it's very close. So it's just a... How is that means... Because they both function on the authority of scripture. That's the basis for anything they do. Just the Kshatriya is about practically applying it, while the Brahman is about understanding it. You understand? So the Brahmins contemplate, teach, study, you know, understand, realize, then they can give that to the Kshatriyas because they're focused more on application. But it's still about the Shastra. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's just like this. To do business, whether you know Shastra or not, you can make business work. Now, if someone knows Shastra, now that's a proper Vaishya. But he'll still do, you know, good business without it. You know what I'm saying? It's not that necessarily be good business for next lifetime, you know, but it works now. You know what I'm saying? But the Brahmin and Kshatriya, if it's not based on Shastra, it actually doesn't work. Does that make sense? Yes. Yes.
In order for the Brahmins to implement, they may have to understand the nature of the Kshatriyas, and the Kshatriyas have to appreciate the...
Yes. That's therefore it's saying the mutual benefit. Mm-hmm. So here we have an example of two who have that appreciation. And then it works very, very nicely. Because each one is glorious in their own area. The two great sons of Swayambhuva Manu, Priyavrata and Uttanapada, ruled the world consisting of seven islands, just according to religious principles. O holy Brahmana, O sinless one, you have spoken of his daughter, known by the name of Devahuti, as the wife of the sage Kardama, the lord of created beings. How many offspring did that great yogi beget through the princess, who was endowed with eightfold perfection in the yoga principles? Right, so she herself was a great yogi, right? Through the eightfold perfection, either meaning that the eight processes of Ashtanga Yoga she was expert at, or the eight siddhis you can get from that process, you know, or both. So the point is that she's very highly qualified. So even though Kshatriya background, she's a great yogi. Otherwise, why? If it was just everybody knew some yoga, why would you mention it? You know, wow, you got a great wife. You know, she knows some yoga. You know, the other side. She also knows how to make the toaster work. You know? Does that make sense? So it's mentioned because she is a great yogi, right? Because also being Satyayuga, then they're going to have to use it. That is the process in that age. Right? Oh, pray, tell me this, for I am eager to hear it. Oh, holy sage, tell me how the worshipful Ruchi and Daksha, the son of Brahma, generated children after securing as their wives the other two daughters of Swayambhuva Manu. Right, so he's asking this as a general question, because here's the Manus. That's one of the topics, so then that will be discussed. But you'll go through it one at a time. So now will be Kardama and Devahuti.
Because you're getting the Supreme Lord as their child, as their son. You know, so then that would be the most prominent. Right? Yes.
So this Vayambhava Manu is the origin of the human life.
Yes, you could say is that, or at least human life in the form of what are the rules and regulations for progressive human life. But he's the first of the Manus.
Yes.
So the first one is Swayambhuva, right? Then you have another. We're on Vaibhasvata, the eighth.
Which means before him it was no human? Or?
Basically. Means you saw before, Brahma's creating all the different
yes.
personalities, and then from that it will expand so you get all 8,400,000. He's expanding the basis that will be the generation of all the others. Does that make sense? Yeah. Verses 6 to 11. Kardama Muni's devotional austerities evoked the Lord's appearance. The great sage Maitreya replied, commanded by Lord Brahma to beget children in the worlds, the worshipable Kardama Muni practiced penance on the bank of the river Saraswati for a period of 10,000 years. During that period of penance, the sage Kardama, by worship through devotional service and trance, propitiated the personality of Godhead, who is the quick bestower of all blessings upon those who flee to him for protection. 6-7. Jiva Goswami in his Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 225 says, because they are also offerings to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, pious deeds here are called Bhakti Krit, or the companions of devotional service. Right? Because the devotion is actually the attitude. Then the companions of that attitude are the activities you perform and the paraphernalia you use. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that all these things can be, anything can be connected to the Lord. Right? Because it's about the devotion. Does that make sense? Right? Now, we are using whatever is our present situation, according to our conditioning, then we can connect that to Krishna. Even if it's not necessarily ideal. But the point is whatever is of value within what we find important is Krishna. So it can be connected. Having connected it, and we become purified from that connection, then we may find that the paraphernalia that we're using is not necessarily the most ideal. Does that make sense? And so then we will naturally improve the quality of that paraphernalia without disturbing the condition, our nature. Right? So if we're using our nature at a lower level of application, by purification, we'll start to use a higher. Does that make sense? But it doesn't change, actually, the nature. You purify. But because purification is not considered a natural course, then in the Western culture, then you have to change your nature. Like the person suddenly becomes conscious that others exist in the world. Then everyone will say they're changing their nature. Or they become religious, they're changing their nature. Right? Because they take the detail as the nature, not the principle. Right? So it's not a matter of changing the nature, it's changing the detail, keeping the principle. This makes sense? No?
Yes.
Kind of? Okay. Yeah, does that make sense? So, therefore here, Bhakti Krit, companions of devotional service. So whatever you're using in devotional, that's companions of devotional service. Right? The body, the family, the wealth, the house, whatever paraphernalia, these are the companions. The techniques used there are the companions. The bhakti is the attitude. Right? Because it's not about what you're doing. As we mentioned, the smartas, who are from the in the worshippers of Vishnu, they follow the same rules we do. So as far as ritual goes, you won't see any difference. But it's not bhakti. Why? Because it doesn't have the attitude. It has the ritual. The paraphernalia is there. but it doesn't have the bhakti. So it's only krit. No bhakti. Right? And we're generally, you know, practiced in bhakti, no krit. Right? So.
And bhakti and no krit is better.
Bhakti and no krit is better than krit and no bhakti. Worst is no bhakti, no krit. That really creates problems. And best is bhakti with krit.
Because it gives the point to those who say it doesn't matter what we do as long as we have bhakti.
As long as you have bhakti. But the point is that bhakti saying that?
No.
Yeah, so that's the whole point. Is that, that's not even krit. Because krit means you know what you're doing. You know, only through pious activities, technically pious activities only are krit, because that gives a long-term result. You know, like that. If I do something short-term, let's say I have a technique that I can go into the internet and by doing different things and do, you know, whatever I do, manipulate the internet, I can somehow or another end up having $100 million. For 3.2 seconds, you know, before somebody figures it out and blocks everything and all that. So will I consider, yeah, I'm a millionaire? You know, maybe for that second you can say that, but would you really consider that? So that's why the practitioners of the Vedic culture will not consider niti as a full system, because it will give you immediate result, because it's the technique that makes it work. But because it doesn't have the right basis in longer vision of attitude and duties, therefore very soon the fruits are finished. You know, it's just like Duryodhana. He got the world for 14 years. And we're talking about people who can live for 1,000 years. Right? For us, 100 years, 14 is not bad. But that would be... You let's say you put it into our thing, it's 1.4, right? So that means what? 1 year, 3 months. Okay, you could go from being basically a king within the empire, the very influential person, and having, you know, vast influence, you know, a great kingdom, to being emperor for 1 year, 3 months, and by the niti that you use to get that, you, all your brothers, everybody that you know will be destroyed. Is anybody going to take it? Probably not. You know? Probably even, you know, Gaddafi would probably even have to think twice about this. You know what I'm saying? I mean, look at these guys. They were there, what, 30, 40, 50 years? You know what I mean? You know, they don't work in 1 year like that. So therefore, that's all he got from niti. But Yudhishthira lost the empire for that long by following Dharma, and then he gets it back unrivaled. Right? He had it unrivaled, he lost it for that, and then he got it back. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. You put it in that context, then... Right? Otherwise, you know, 14 years is not bad. But... You know, when you live 1,000, it is bad. Is that okay? Seven sisters. Yeah. They're pretty nuts. That's right. I saw them in Australia. Exactly the same. Yeah, big body and crazy and like that. You know, it's just the way they are. Sakama devotional service that is also mixed with these pious deeds, karmas, are described in the words of Srimad Bhagavatam, 3:21-6:7. Right? So this sakama we see here is a way to elevate yourself. You say, oh, well, this is not good. As an end result, yes, it's not good. But as a starting point, it's really good. Right? Because then you're connecting everything to Krishna. Does that make sense? So it's basically like this. It's just like in the spiritual world, you have vaidhi and you have spontaneity. So the spontaneity is higher in the spiritual world and the Vaidhi's lower. In the material world, because it's a reflection, reversed, the spontaneity is lower and the Vaidhi is higher. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So therefore, the Sakam is, I am doing what I want to do because I want to do it. That's lower than I want to do what is my nature. Right? I'm committed to performing the activities of my nature, and if you then your nature is what you like to do. Does that make sense? So the administrator, he likes to administrate. Like I remember, I was talking with one devotee about these, you know, going to GBC meetings. And, you know, you hear the other ones, the meeting this and that and so many things like that. And just, I was walking behind him and I said, you have to go to the meeting because I think some issue is coming up. They said, you know, like this is going to be a trip. And he just looked at me and says, of course it's going to be a trip. But that's what we do. That's my service, is dealing with trips. You know, so therefore, you know, his point was, why lament about it? Why sit there and, like this? His point is that's what you have to do. So he was perfect for being in meetings. Because for him, it wasn't a problem. I mean, of course, but everything's a problem. Right? Changing the baby's diaper is a problem. Right? But for the mom, it's not a problem. It's an accepted point. Right? Does that make sense? Unless your husband's a bit metro, and then you get him to do it, right? Okay. When he saw the sage, so the whole, do we catch that here? Is that we're dealing with Sakam Bhakti here. But the whole point that we'll see throughout this is he's turning to the Lord. Vidura is wanting to hear about it because it is devotional service and how it's all connected to Krishna. And now we're going to see how Kardama Muni and that the Sakam elements are all connected. But from that, it brings about the topmost realization. So that's the whole point. To make it, this is where we're situated. That's wrong. That's nonsense. That's wrong. The point is we want to get to Naishkarmya, we start with Sakam. If you can start with Naishkarmya, great. Why waste your time? But if not, you start there and it goes. Because it's connected to bhakti, it's perfect. Yes? It's about the bhakti, not the crit.
No, just usually you expect somebody of the level of bhakti crit, whatever is higher, to bring the supreme personality of that is yourself.
So is it about... Is it about the technique?
No, it's about the quality of the person.
Yeah, so if that sincerity is there, then why not?
Maybe it was because of devotee.
The point is bhakti on any level is elevated. Naishkarmya is more elevated than that. Does that make sense? It's not that Naishkarmya is, you know, you have to get out, you know, your binoculars to find it, you know, like that. It's very elevated. So therefore, then if that sincerity is there, even if one's not so developed, that will generate very good results because those results are Krishna. So that's the point, is that except that let me say, to get this balance that we understand that Naishkarmya is higher, the jnana is higher than karma, but that doesn't mean karma is not of value. But it doesn't mean karma is the value. You know what I'm saying? Because you generally get, karma is the thing, all this renunciation, that's not real. You know, or renunciation is this, all this other stuff is useless. Does that make sense? No, the point is as stages, it's all useful. You know what I'm saying? The child takes their first steps. You know, there's been no Olympic medals won. You know? Like that. But it's important. Right? But they start there. You know, you don't say, hey, that's stupid. Can't you walk straight? You know, why do you keep falling over in your bum? You know? Everyone else is going to get past you. You know, it's like that. You don't sit there and say these things. You know? That's the thing, but then that's another thing. That's a question for social services. Therefore, the point of Varna Shankar. I'm talking about the parents here. Is that? Yes.
The first step is to accept our nature.
If we accept the nature, then you can engage it. The point is, we don't accept our nature, how are we engaging it? You know? Like, unless you accept that this is a stick of incense, you know, and there's a particular technique on how to use that incense, right? I hold the part with the wood, and I light the part that's not wood, you know, and then I place it in a way that the wood part is holding it up rather than the other way. Otherwise, you get the, you know, cigar in the ashtray kind of effect, you know. It's not going to work. So you know what I'm saying? You have to accept that. Then you can do something with it. So if we don't accept our nature, you actually can't engage it. So if someone doesn't know their nature, accept their nature, how are they engaging it? Means they're engaged in the direct activities of devotional service, no doubt. Right? Hearing, chanting, remembering, you know, serving the deities, hearing Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, living in the Dhamma. That they're doing, which is the most important of all the devotional activities. So that's the point where you have bhakti, no crit. Right? So it's the most important of the activities. But the problem is the conditioning, that is unable to be engaged. And because of that, then there's a social dissatisfaction. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point. If that's accepted, then it runs smoothly. You don't have those problems. You know? There is no difficulty in that way. That, yeah.
All right. So, previously we discussed that the nature doesn't change.
Yes.
Does it mean that the nature of the relationship doesn't change?
Nature of?
Of the relationship between, you know, people or, say, like, Varanas and like this?
No, it doesn't change. So, means, see, is in ashram, Varanas don't matter.
Right.
Varanas only matter within Varna. If you're doing... Yeah. Some kind of social economic endeavor, then you have to consider the varnas.
Okay.
It's just like, where does somebody get a seat, you know, in a business thing? It's the guy who's the, you know, biggest, richest, fattest, you know, ugliest. They're the guys that get the best seats.
Yeah.
Right? So, but when it comes to ashram, it's not that the guy who's richest, he gives the Bhagavatam class.
Okay.
You understand?
Yeah.
So then it's about the devotional and all those things. But when it comes to you know, who's going to make the decision on a administrative point, or that administrators, on businessmen, or, you know, those who know economics. You know, that dealing with some aspect of knowledge, then... Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So having devotional knowledge is one thing. Knowing how to organize training within it in a systematic way, that's a different thing.
Yes.
But otherwise, every devotee has knowledge about Krishna and can give that to others. But to do that systematically, just like for yourself, you can organize your life, but organize others, you have to have technique. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like so... That's the thing, is in ashram you don't consider varna. So it's not that only the Brahmin gives the class, anybody gives the class if they, you know, that they have. In other words, if you have a larger audience, then it's someone who people want to hear from. If you have a smaller audience, then everybody gives class.
Yeah.
Is that make sense? You know, that's kind of, you know, or the one who's, you know, not shy. So he may be starting with his sakam element. He wants the world to hear. So he's giving class. Everyone benefits. But then with time, as they become purified, then that becomes less important. So that's the whole thing, is to be able to, in other words, you can be advanced in one area, but in another, not necessarily. That's where the difficulty comes in, is to be able to have this mutual respect. Like, because we're used to it, if you're respected by everybody on all accounts. But the Vedic, you're respected for your position on accounts that that position has meaning. You know, does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, the businessman, then it's okay. We say, you know, he has something to say when it comes to an economic thing, but let's say he's down, you know, on the wharf and that, and some guy's having trouble getting the knot undone and all that. He doesn't know knots, so he may say, you know, well, just untie it. Or, duh. You know, of course he's trying to untie it, but, you know, the last guy didn't do it right, so... You know what I'm saying? So, but he thinks, well, you know, you're just a, you know, just a guy manning the ropes on a boat, and I'm the businessman. They said, but he knows more than you when it comes to the boat. Does that make sense? So this ability to be able to see where your position of authority and respect comes in and where it doesn't. That's the delicate thing. So the easiest in ashram, just nobody has it. You know? So then that works. But then when you go into Varna, it's not, you continue that same attitude, but it's based on what it is they can do. So it's not because of ego, therefore, it's because they have that skill. Is that, yeah. So then it works. Is that, yeah. So that's the difficult part, is to be able to deal with many things at once, because we're from a culture that's, you know, pretty straightforward.
It's, you know, all or nothing.
Yeah, it's all or nothing. Yeah. If you're not first, you're last. You know, that kind of, yeah. Yeah.
I'm just wondering what you were mentioning about accepting one's nature, and look at how temples have been run in the West, so, you know, the small temples and small cities. So it seems that many people want to run the place, but no one running the place. You know? Everyone has something to say on how to sweep the floor, but no one's sweeping the floor. So everyone wants to lord or say something important.
That's the whole point, is Brahmins, if they want to take the point of they're only going to advise and not do, but they can only give advice. They can't claim credit for that advice, and they can't expect that anybody will follow their advice. So if they want that, that's not Brahminical.
But we seem to have lots of advisors and not a lot of that.
But they're not advisors.
Yeah, I know.
The point is that's because everybody's, you know, how you say? The famous statements about everybody's got a belly button. You know, opinions are like belly buttons. Everyone's got one.
So we should make people aware, or we should...
Not exactly.
So we should impart knowledge as to try and figure out what one's nature is, so that we can...
The point is sweeping the floor, okay, but you want to give advice. One, do you really know the person you're giving to? Is that the qualified one? Do they want to hear it? You know what I'm saying? And, okay, you can say, but if nobody does it, are these advisors getting upset? Yeah, if they're getting upset, then what's their right to get upset? An advisor means you don't get upset.
I just mean, if people knew their nature better, then things, temples would run smoother.
That's there. But the point is it's if people are committed to pure devotional service, that's really what's going to make the temples run. See, we're talking here about these technical points. This is crit. You understand? This is not the bhakti part. This is paraphernalia of companions of devotional service. So that's the thing, is we'll either take, we go to one extreme or the other. No, it's you have to have pure devotional service as the motive. If that's the motive, everybody's trying their best. Now, the varnashram is a way to coordinate that to make it run smoothly. But even if you don't, everyone's devotionally there and has devotional etiquette, then it'll basically work out, especially on a smaller level. Very big level, you need some administrative ability. But when you have these small temples, then You know, it doesn't take, you don't have to have, you know, a, you know, Maharaj Uttanapada to run, you know, a temple that's got, you know, three devotees in it. And that's possibly including Gorni Thai. Actually, you'd have to have more. Gorni Thai and Prabhupada, yes. Yeah, in other words, nobody lives in the temple. So, yeah, they just come and they unlock the door and then they do something and unlock it. Yeah. Sad but funny. Yeah. Does that make sense? So the Varnashram is a useful tool. Just like nice paraphernalia in the kitchen is useful for someone who's inspired to cook. But if I have the best paraphernalia, if no one wants to cook, what does it matter?
So focus on devotional service and
then that's the problem. Focus on that. He'd talk about these other things. But as one becomes purified, this makes sense. Does that make sense? If someone comes from a background that has structure, then okay, it makes sense earlier. But you still have to see the connection to devotional service. That will come with purity. So by devotional service, then all this will come into play. It's not about it's lost or this or that. You know what I'm saying? Let's say you're really hungry. Okay? I mean, really hungry. And you're, you know, looking for something to eat. Then something goes weird. You know, the house is on fire or there's, you know, something, you know, just something out of the ordinary. So you get busy with that. Are you remembering about hunger? No. So now as soon as you get rid of all that, then the hunger naturally comes back. So therefore, the ability to understand and do these things is only there because of the coverings of ignorance. You get rid of the ignorance, these things are natural. You know, they're saying, oh, this is previous, it doesn't apply now. That's only because people are too ignorant to make it apply. That's all. It's not rocket science. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Organize things so that everybody is peaceful, safe, and can be God conscious. That's what administration is. That's all it is. Then you have all the unlimited technique. So if someone's talking about all the technique, that means they're not actually that good. Right? Unless, of course, they're trying to prove to someone who thinks that there's less technique than that and they know everything. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Study, teach. That's it. Right? Buy something cheaper than you sell it for. That's it. You know, does that make sense? Or for the artist, what's bouncing around in his head, make it physically visible. That's it. So it's not rocket science. So if someone in that area, then they have an ability. And depending upon their ability, it may be greater or lesser. Is that
yes.
You know, it's like Dalika. What is it? Who was on the ceiling? That was Michelangelo. Yeah, he's doing stuff like that. How many artists ever do stuff like that? Hardly anybody. And then there's that other really famous one. It's about this big. You know, I think the roses or something. You know, it's like. I think they even did it with their fingers. Does that make sense? So. But they know that principle. But then how great their ability is how broad it could be. Does that make sense? So like Da Vinci, then it goes even into other areas. You know? So it's just, that's very big. Does that make sense? You know, some guy can sit there with his, you know, however it is, his banjo or something, and he can make things happen. Other people can think of a whole arrangement. But the principle is the same. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? You know, some guy's selling, you know, stolen hubcaps. Another guy has a whole, you know, runs a whole, you know, car empire. You know, they're not mutually exclusive here. I guess the common principle is everyone likes hubcaps. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So in this, you can't go that, oh, it's all about varnashram. But you can't go, it's all about bhakti. No, it's all about bhakti, but you have to express it. Therefore, socially, then we have varnashram. So that's why Bhagavatam, though it's for Paramahamsas, this is constantly coming up. Because this is how you connect the secondary nature to Krishna. Right? The primary is the consciousness of the soul. The secondary is the conditioning. Right? So that's the indirect. The indirect is more difficult to deal with. It takes more knowledge, more development. That's why it's the last. Even though it's the lower, it's the last. It takes more qualifications. Like that, like the name and the Gayatri. The Gayatri requires material qualification. The name doesn't. Though the name is higher. That's the point. Because it's higher, it can deal on a level that of people with no skill. But these higher things require skill. Does that make sense? So if people do know, it makes it easier, but that's not where you have to start. You explain it, and when people understand it, then nice. But at least leadership should understand it. When he saw the sage, tears fell from the eyes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is a sign that Kardama Muni was actually a Nishkama devotee, free of all material desires. Only to honor the order of the demigod Brahma did he act like a person punished by material, pushed by material desire. In this way it should be understood. Right? So he's following a path that appears to be Sakam, but he himself is actually Nishkama. Like that. So that's the point, is that even the advanced devotee is performing the activities of Sakam. Right? Depending upon their position. Right? Grihastha has all his facility. You know, the brahmacharis, the vanprasanyas, and they have their particular things that they follow and do. Like that. So that's all, the form is that of the Sakam. Right? But the attitude is that of Nishkam. And then ultimately, then it's of bhakti. Right? Is that, yes?
You see, Bhagavad Gita starts with the same point.
Yes, yes.
Develops.
Yes, yes. So this is just, you know, it's the beginning. Because Rupa Goswami mentions, even if one is advanced, one still acts as if he's a neophyte. So that would mean then socially and other things he would act on that platform. If you want to take part in the mission, you know, if you want to be an Avadhut or Paramahamsa, that you can do, but that's kind of, you do that on your own. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Then, in Satyayuga, the lotus-eyed Supreme Personality of Godhead, being pleased, showed himself to that Kardama Muni and displayed his transcendental form, which can be understood only through the Vedas. Footnote 2. Or, according to Sridhar Swami's explanation, the meaning can be, quote, he had a body made of the Vedas, end quote. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes that the phrase Dadat Vapu, revealing his form of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, can also mean nourished by the sense, garlands, and food offered by Kardama. Right, so we're bringing out both that he is the personification of the Vedas, and at the same time as it's about the bhakti being rendered between the devotee and the Lord that makes it dynamic, the process dynamic. Does that make sense? So we get both, is that following the directions of the scriptures, that's done with devotion. Then you get a complete program. Kardama Muni saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is free from material contamination, in his eternal form, effulgent like the sun, wearing a garland of white lotuses and water lilies. The Lord was clad in spotless yellow silk, and his lotus face was fringed with slick dark locks of curly hair. Right, spotless yellow silk, because yellow actually is not easy to keep clean. Right, the original, when the school was being managed here in the 70s, then because the white clothes would tend to turn yellow because of the iron in the water, they had the great idea to make the dye the clothes yellow. So you got rid of that problem, but then the yellow showed the dirt in that more. Because somehow or another it's become, you know, a standard in many, many schools is the wearing of the yellow. So here, spotless means somebody's taking care of it quite nicely. So that, therefore, the Lakshmi Sahasra, right? Yeah. Adorned with a crown and earrings, he held his characteristic conch, disc, and mace in three of his hands, and a white lily in the fourth. He glanced about in a happy, smiling mood, whose sight captivates the hearts of all devotees. A golden streak on his chest, the famous Kastuba gem suspended from his neck, he stood in the air with his lotus feet placed on the shoulders of Garuda. So he's always there, means he as Vishnu Tattva, and then he's always with Shakti Tattva and Jiva Tattva, right? Because the Srivatsa is the Shakti Tattva, and the Kastuba is the Jiva Tattva. So he's always, so that's why the Pancha Tattva, you have the aspects of Godhead and then the aspects of his energies. That's complete. Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 11 says, these descriptions are certainly not the imagination of Kardama Muni. The decorations of the Lord are beyond the material conception, as admitted even by the impersonalists like Sankaracharya. Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has nothing to do with the material creation. That Shankaracharya makes that point. Narayana is beyond the material creation. So you'd think from there they would understand that he is, you know, a transcendental person. But they're so dull that they don't catch, even though their acharya has made this statement very clearly. Right? The varieties of the transcendental Lord, his body, his form, his dress, his instructions, his words, are not manufactured by the material energy, but are all confirmed in the Vedic literature. So that's why the point is that he is the Vedas. Right? Because every aspect of his form is confirmed by the Vedas. Because the Vedas are just describing him. Right. By performance of yoga, Kardama Muni actually saw the Supreme Lord as he is. There was no point in seeing an imagined form of God after practicing yoga for 10,000 years. The perfection of yoga, therefore, does not terminate in voidness or impersonalism. On the contrary, the perfection of yoga is attained when one actually sees the personality of Godhead in his eternal form. Because that's the whole point of it. Though that gets lost, because how it's written Patanjali, because you're dealing with not necessarily everybody's Vaishnava, but at least then they will worship, they'll meditate upon Vishnu. Right? So he's getting them to do that. But because that's not talked about so much in the later chapters of the work, then the yogi may make the mistake that it's not about Vishnu. But that's the basis of it. Just like in the Gita, you give all the technical points at the end, but it's all based on the points made in the beginning, that it's all about connecting your activities, your facilities, your mind, everything to the Lord, your intelligence. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The process of Krishna consciousness is to deliver the form of Krishna directly. The form of Krishna is described in the authoritative Vedic literature, Brahma Samhita. His abode is made of Chintamani stone, and the Lord plays there as a cowherd boy and is served by many thousands of gopis. These descriptions are authoritative, and a Krishna-conscious person takes them directly, acts on them, preaches them, and practices devotional service as enjoined in the authoritative scriptures. So these things, they take it that this is the Abhida Shakti. They take it the direct meaning, right? They don't take the Lakshana Shakti that, oh, well, actually it means this. Because that's the thing. It directly says this, but then the impersonalists, they'll say, but it says that, but actually it means this. Right? Because that's all. But actually you could say it means anything. You know what I'm saying? Once you leave the direct interpretation, then you could come up with anything, unless it's something that just doesn't apply. Right? Therefore, then that means then you're using the lakshana. Then it's poetic. But these aren't. So the point is he's performed yoga, he is directly seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the scriptures define. So the Lord and how he's defined the scriptures are the same. They're not different.
Verses 12 to 21. Kardama Muni offers the Lord prayers. In this section of verses, Kardama offers obeisances to the Lord and then prayerfully requests the Lord to satisfy his desire for a wife. When Kardama Muni actually realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead in person, he was greatly satisfied because his transcendental desire was fulfilled. He fell on the ground with his head bowed to offer obeisances unto the lotus feet of the Lord. His heart naturally full of love of God. With folded hands, he satisfied the Lord with prayers. The great sage Kardama said, O Supreme Worshipful Lord, my power of sight is now fulfilled. Having attained the greatest perfection of the sight of you, who are the reservoir of all existences. Through many successive births of deep meditation, advanced yogis aspire to see your transcendental form. Footnote 3. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Kardama Muni says, It is the highest mercy of the Lord and my highest good fortune to see the Lord so quickly. Bhatta expresses astonishment. You are the form, rase, for the most fallen beings, and I have not even done suitable sadhana, worship of the Lord. The most excellent yogis who have perfected yoga by many births pray to see you. Your lotus feet are the true vessel to take one across the ocean of mundane existence. Your only persons deprived of their intelligence by the spell of the deluding energy will worship those feet with a view to attain the trivial and momentary pleasures of the senses, which even persons rotting in hell can attain. However, like it says, I think it's on Patala, that when the Lord blows his conch, that it disturbs the wine parties that all the ladies are having down on Patala. You know, they're all sitting there drinking and ooh, you know, like that. So as I say, even in hell they get these things. Srila Prabhupada describes in his purport to verse 14 those who worship the Lord for material benefits. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, there are two kinds of devotees. Those who desire material pleasures and those who desire nothing but service to the Lord. Right? Hellish and demoniac persons do not actually know what is the ultimate attainment in perfection. And therefore they think that sense gratification is the highest goal of life. They advise that one can satisfy the senses and at the same time by reciting some mantra and by some practice can cheaply aspire for perfection. Such persons are described here as hatamedasa, which means those whose brains are spoiled. They aspire for material enjoyment by perfection of yoga or meditation. So it mentions hellish and demoniac. So that one's in that species because of the desire for sense gratification. That sense gratification is predominant, therefore one's born in these families and situations. Right? So we can see in this situation they're only interested in sense gratification. That's because that was their mentality before. So it's not that those social systems are what generate it. No, those who have that mentality end up there. So you adjust the mentality, then the background doesn't matter. Does that make sense? That's why in the actual Vedic culture, that if one is within a particular social strata and acts like that, then one's accepted like that. But if one's from that strata and doesn't act like that, acts on the higher platform, you're accepted on that higher platform. Does that make sense? It's just like, how many Shudranis do you hear of being such major players in the court of the king, advisors and prime ministers? Right? You don't. Because generally they don't have the character. But Vidura has the character. Therefore, that's what's accepted. So the character is what's accepted. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that
a particular social situation, you might expect certain mentality. So you're aware of that and careful about that. But if someone shows different from that, then you accept that. You don't say, oh no, they're from this strata, they can't act like that. Does that make sense? So it has both. You know? Hope for the best, expect the worst. Right? You know? So you can function. So that's the whole thing, is that someone is dealt with as they are. So someone even from a higher grade position, if they don't act like someone from there, then you'll be wary of their behavior. In other words, let's say someone from a higher nature, you might be more confidential with. But if someone's from a background that you would expect that, but they're not, then you're not confidential with them. Right? Does that make sense? Same way in the inverse. Like I think Prabhupada used to talk about Mr. Bosch, you know, who ran the company that Prabhupada was in. That he would sometimes, when he really had a lot to think about, he would go out for a drive in his car. And he would discuss everything with his chauffeur. Right? You know, because he was an elder man, he's been around, he's seen so many things. You know, because that's the thing, is that Shudras are there. They see. Right? Because they're on the side, they're like invisible. But it's not that they don't see everything. Because they're in so many situations. So then he could give him advice. So he would go out and talk with him like that. Is that? Yeah, so therefore, but you don't hear about everybody doing that. Most of the time, do you talk with the driver in the car? No, only if he's going to fall asleep, then you start talking about stuff. You see him nodding off, oh, hey, how's your family? You know, where do you live? You know? Then he wakes up. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole thing, is that the actual Vedic culture is accepting someone by what their character is, right? Not by what their background is. But if someone acts according to their background, you accept them in that way. They act out of that background, you accept them that way. Does that make sense? So if a fisherman's acting like a fisherman, he's dealt with like a fisherman. Right? But if they're not acting like a fisherman, right, then you get Shantanu and wanting to marry the fisherman's daughter. Right? Because they're acting in a whole different category. So that makes sense? Yeah. Huh? Yeah, it is. It's very scientific. So does that make sense? So it deals with both the aspects of those who have these social problems, either for or against them, because it acknowledges the important aspect of both, right? Because the liberal will say no, but the individual, if they have the qualification, why not? Why can't they be free and do what they want? Which is true. And the other is, but no, but they're acting this way, and so if we just let it open to everybody, then it'll be chaos, which is true. So the whole thing is, however someone acts, that's how they're dealt with. Does that sound like that? So that's the Vedic thing. It's not their background, it's how they act. Right? You know, it's like I told that story of that... I think it was the king's party or something, came across somebody in the forest who hadn't eaten for, like, I don't know, 3 weeks or something. And then he wanted to take a bath, and then he sat, he said prayers and everything like that. And he looked like somebody had been living out in the forest, because he has been, you know, his whole life. You know, so he looked like a forest dweller. But I think it was the prime minister was saying, even I wouldn't be able to do what this guy was doing if I was hungry like that. Right, so then they understood this must be, you know, somebody from a high grade background. So then they checked and they figured out that in time previously, you know, either from that family or some other family, one of the princes, when he was very small or a baby, got lost. Right. Does that make sense? Right, so they figured out he's them. So then he's trained as a prince. Right? Even though he had grown up as a forest dweller, you know, so he looked like a tribal, he dressed like a tribal, but he didn't act like one. So he was taken as how he acted. I'm sure that they, you know, cleaned him up afterwards.
In Bhagavad Gita, stated by the Lord that the intelligence of those who worship the demigods has been spoiled. Similarly, here too it is stated by Kardama Muni that one who aspires after material enjoyment by practice of yoga has spoiled his brain substance and is fool number one. So yoga is never for material benefit. It's always for the spiritual. The material is a side thing. You know what I'm saying? Just like you eat because it nourishes the body. As a side thing, it tastes nice and the senses are satisfied. Is that? Actually, the intelligent practitioner of yoga should aspire for nothing else but to cross over the ocean of nescience by worshipping the personality of Godhead and to see the lotus feet of the Lord. The Lord is so kind, however, that even today persons whose brain substance is spoiled are given the benediction to become cats, dogs, or hogs and enjoy material happiness from sex life and sense gratification. So, you're saying those whose brains are spoiled, they're interested in sense gratification, human form doesn't really give that much facility. So Krishna is so kind, he gives them facility to become, you know, hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. And then they can enjoy all they like. Right? The Lord confirms this benediction in Bhagavad Gita. Quote, whatever a person aspires to receive from me, I offer him what he desires. So if someone's a cat, because they wanted to be, and Krishna's kind, he gave them, you know, the facility to be a cat. Yeah? So, I mean, think about it, a cat. The cat can be grumpy all day, and everyone thinks it's cute. Right? Yeah. Like that, you know. Means, you know, be self-centered, be control of everything. It's their house, you're living in their house, right? You want to feel the master of the house, get a dog. You know, you don't mind the subservient position, get a cat, right? So, you know, Krishna fulfills all desires. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on the same verse. Kardama says, oh, people worship you, the ocean of mercy, for fulfilling material desires. This is their foolishness. Those who have lost intelligence because of your Maya only, those who have lost their intelligence because of your Maya, only those and no others, worship you to obtain just a particle of pleasure. Okay, because you've lost intelligence because of Maya, then you worship for material pleasure. Yeah, so only those and no others. So it means the devotees don't do that. Right? But you give them those pleasures profusely, though you are reluctant. Right? So he'll give them, but he's reluctant. But, you know, they want, so they're giving. If he did not do so, they, not knowing the happiness of bhakti, would quickly give up devotion to you. Because if someone doesn't know actually the taste of bhakti, then they might give up worship of the Lord. But they're worshiping the Lord and getting facility, therefore they continue the worship. And then by continuing that worship, at some point one becomes purified, and then one sees that this is a waste of time, like we see with Dhruva Maharaj. He's worshiping purely for material benefit. But then by that focus, he's always absorbed in the Lord, he becomes purified. So then when he sees the Lord, he can see what foolishness that was. So it still works. That's the greatness of the system. So he pointed out the positiveness of it, but at the same time as now we're seeing the negative of it. But it still works. So the positive, so we see, yes, it's something to do. I have material facility. I should approach the Lord. But it's pointing out that actually that's foolish because you can get so much more. But if you do it, you still will get benefit. Because otherwise, if you only present one or the other side, then you know it will be out of balance. Someone will take only the one side or only the other side. But yeah, does that make sense? So we shouldn't become confused because both sides are presented. It's just so that there's a balance. Yes.
Now, usually, we get the realization of materialism not important after doing.
Yes.
Not
that's why it says here, less intelligent, or spoiled his brain substance. You know, all these nice terminologies are used by Kardama Muni here. So that's because, by general, third-class intelligence is considered good.
Yes.
Right? I mean, someone hears something and they know it. It's like, who does that?
you know, the funny nerd down at the end there that nobody likes. Okay, maybe like that. Does that make sense? You know, and if someone sees something and then they can do it, okay, you know, Da Vinci, he could see anything and then draw anything. Okay, and that's but being able to learn from doing, now that's considered like good down-home intelligence. You know, that's a smart guy, practical guy. And doing and not learning, hey, that's us. You know, you know, that's the... Is that right? You know, so, yeah.
That's point when he first Narada Muni, he said, "You teach my sons to become sannyasis, but they are simply boys. When they go through experience, only then they can renounce."
Okay. Yes. Yeah. No. Very good point. You hear?
No.
No. He was saying about that. Daksha makes the same point. When he cursed Narada Muni because he turned all his sons into sannyasis. Daksha's point was, you know, you've done it through, they've heard, and then they took sannyas. But he's saying the real way is you go through grihastha life, then you understand, then you take sannyas. Right? Narada Muni was so powerful that simply by hearing, they could affect it. Right? So they didn't even see, because they're young boys, they don't have any experience. So he neither saw, or, you know, you either see others going through the experience or you yourself go through the experience. But they just heard by hearing, so he didn't appreciate that. You know, but the point is if you can learn by hearing, that's better. Why go through all the trouble? You know, but it's a, what is it? Misery loves company. Right? So that's the whole point. You can't know unless you did, you know, what I did. You know, in other words, I, you know, you can't be smarter than me. You know, I'm not the idiot here. You know, so, yeah. So, therefore, false ego plays a lot in all these elements. That's why in the Varna, which you're dealing with the false identity, that's why the social statuses and that are so much more in place than in ashram. Is that what it says? Yeah. It's there in ashram, but mildly. You know, just for certain smaller details. But in it, just as a function, it has to be there in Varna. Yeah. You do so hoping that by not giving up bhakti, for some time they will lose these desires. Fulfilling those desires is not your final intention, since those desires for son, wife, family, and wealth will lead them to hellish birth. Right? Because if you get distracted by all this, that's where it will lead. It will go. Because the point is human life's meant to elevate. So if it's not elevating, it's degrading. It's that simple. Right? And if you're doing both, that's mixed. You get both. You know, like Nariga, you go to heavenly planets unlimitedly, but he ended up in the well as a lizard, right? So he's got both. Right.
The same place.
Yeah. 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 Very equal, very fair. Kardama continues. Therefore, desiring to marry a girl of like disposition, who may prove to be a venerable cow of plenty in my married life, to satisfy my lustful desire, I too have sought the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the source of everything, for you are like a desire tree. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to this verse, Kardama Muni said, "Though I criticize those with material desires, I am the chief person with material desires. I desire to marry a wife who supplies artha, dharma, and kama in household life. Griya Medha Denum. By calling his wife a cow, he implies that he is a bull, since he has no intelligence." Okay. So in this case, by calling the, calling her, you know, a silly cow, but the bull is more dumb. Like that. So if I'm a cow, that means you're a bull. That means you're the stupid one here. Yeah. Yeah. So that's another instance of not knowing the science, not knowing the politics. One makes this mistake. Okay. Among those with material desires, I am evil, durashaya. I have no intelligence because of my bad intentions.
I approach the fee, the source of all objects, of you who are a desire to simply to get married. Right.
So here we see this combination of all the social and devotional elements, because that was the question before, is that if he's on the platform of Sakama, how is he having a son like Kardama Muni? But then, as Prabhupada pointed out, he's actually on the platform of Naishkarmya. Right? So then that does support the original doubt, you know, is that he's advanced. But the point is it's devotional service that's the specialness. Right? So then many amazing things may happen from devotees, right, despite their position. But here they're Naishkarmya, so therefore that aspect is there. But him getting married is following the order of his spiritual master, Lord Brahma. Right? And so then of doing this, then, or in this case more because he's his father. Right? So then, because he's the father, so then he's taking that up. But at the same time, it's not that he's not interested. It's, you know, it's okay, since we're going to do that, then fine. So because of that, then he considers himself a materialist, you know, and sense enjoyer. But you see, it's all based on, he's using yoga, he's praising the Lord, he's seeing things in its natural position. Right? So that's the whole thing. It's therefore, one performs one's devotional service with the idea that as close as possible that one can get to trying to do everything to please Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So, whether you're starting from your own desires or whether you're starting from your duties, right? It doesn't matter. Does that make sense? Because your duties will include the natural desires. Does that make sense? Right? So, it's just like this. For a grihastha, the natural position is having children. So, because of the duties of household life, they'll have children. Right? But let's say someone who's not married wants to have children, then they take up the duties of household life. So however it starts, it doesn't matter. Right? If it's connected to the Lord, it has purifying effect. And while one's doing one's duties, one's not proud of them. Therefore, even these duties deal with sense gratification. Therefore, he's thinking he has material desires. Though factually, he's just trying to do his duties to fulfill the instruction of his father. Does that make sense? So even though he is Naishkarmya, he attributes to himself the position of Sakam. Right? That's the... And so, in this way, we get all the nice instructions from all the directions. It's for giving example, but it's also, this is the natural lifestyle. So when they say these things, it's because they sincerely think like that. You know, just like we see in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it's because they sincerely think like that, not that they're just saying that. It's not like a reality show that's scripted, you know, so that they're trying to make it look real, but, you know, actually it's not. You know. No, it's not. It's not for, it's just natural humility.
I'm just trying to understand what he said. I have no intelligence because of my bad intentions.
He's mentioned intelligence means worshiping the Lord for devotional service, not for material facility. Mm. But he's done this to get a wife so he can be a proper grihastha. So he'll take that. That's less intelligent. Mm-hmm. Right? So that means, in other words, you perform devotional service just for bhakti, that's intelligent. Performing devotional service with material motive, that's less intelligent. Okay? Not performing devotional service and wanting material desires, absolutely stupid. You know, so better less intelligent than stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. You understand? So you're putting it in the context here. Okay. So we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura ki.